From NPR News, I'm Tony Cox. On today's show, we take a look back at some of the highlights and lowlights of 2004, especially for people of color. Also, journalists Norman Solomon and Amy Goodman help us find the year's stories that were lost and did not make the front pages, but should have, in their view. And later, we shine a spotlight on the year in entertainment, the hits, the misses, and the passing of the torch. But first, the year in news in Black America. 2004 started with Haiti collapsing into chaos and ended with the oldest civil rights organization in the land looking for leadership. In between, where African Americans were concerned, the country celebrated milestones, took some giant steps forward as well as one or two sideways, and continued the struggle for social, economic, and political equality. Here to help us run through the year's most memorable moments are Melissa Harris-Lacewell. She is professor of political science at the University of Chicago's Center for the Study of Race, Politics, and Culture. She joins us from our NPR bureau in the Windy City. Melissa, nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And in studio with me right here in Los Angeles, political analyst and nationally syndicated columnist Earl Ofari Hutchinson. Earl, nice to see you as well.
Always a pleasure, Tony.
Earl, let's start here. With President Jean-Bertrand Aristide fleeing Haiti, now there is a sense of lawlessness today, and Haitian immigrants to this country have found themselves caught in a homeland security quagmire. They're even talking about an international protectorate there. This sounds very ominous, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And when you look at the history of Haiti, it's been a tragic history, all the way back to invasions, all the way back to occupation of Haiti during the past pre-century. So what's happened is you've got an economy that's in collapse, you've got a country that's in chaos, you've got a government supposedly in transition, but a government that's seemingly always in transition in Haiti because there's always changes there. And of course, the legally elected president of Haiti, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, is not in the country. He had to flee. So really, when you've got the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere and really no end in sight, the economy in collapse, people leaving in droves, in fact, dying trying to get out of the country. We have to ask the question, what is the United States? What are the Western nations? And in fact, what is the Haitian government, the political establishment, such as it is in Haiti? What's going to be their role in the future of trying to reconstruct this country and bring stability there? At this point in time, Tony, as we move into 2005, it seems to me chaos is still going to be the rule in Haiti with no end in sight.
Let me bring Melissa in on this. How significant, Melissa, of an event was this on African Americans here and their relationship to that nation?
Well, it's incredibly important. What we did as a nation was to topple a democratically elected government and hand it over to thugs. And in many ways, what this does is, just like Iraq, it helps to reveal the great lie of American foreign policy. American foreign policy is not about setting up stable economic and democratic arenas in which people live. This whole sort of notion of freedom that President Bush has talked about, that's clearly not what happened in Haiti. But there's also an indictment here, I think, for African Americans. Because so many of us, I think, have failed to completely understand the extent to which we are a people in a diaspora, a people who have international interests. And I think that, unfortunately, the domestic African-American community did not do enough to mobilize around these issues so that now Haiti can be in the middle rather than on the front pages of the newspapers again.
You know, we have a number of topics to run through, so I'm just going to mention some of them and direct them to you individually, starting with you, Earl. In Africa, we've had a number of humanitarian crises beyond the terrible devastation that was wreaked by the tsunamis this week. Sudan, Congo, especially hard hit this year. What do you regard as the principal problems and reasons for them there?
Well, I think two things. Number one, corruption, dictatorship, right? And the two go hand in hand, and still in many African countries. The second thing is failed promises. Now, Africa is still one of the most overexploited continents on the planet. We certainly know that the natural resources in Africa are phenomenal in many of the countries there. The resources are just off the radar chart in terms of their potential for development. But the bottom line is there have been a lot of promises about foreign aid, development money that has come from the United States and the rich nations of the West and Japan, and those promises have been failed promises over and over again. So I think in tandem with the corruption, dictatorship, failed promises of foreign aid and assistance to Africa, I think we're still going to see almost comparable to Haiti in many of the African countries still chaos, chaos, still under development, poverty and disease with no end in sight. Although there is some progress in some African countries, particularly Uganda, and even to an extent, ironically, Rwanda, which was racked, as you know, by genocidal, a holocaust there a few years ago. So stability has come in some places.
Let's talk about affirmative action closer to home, Melissa. In the same year that we celebrated the 50th anniversary of Brown v. Board of Education, Texas A&M became the first public college to abandon its legacy policy in response to mounting criticism from civil rights groups who argued that it was inherently discriminatory. How big a step was that?
It really is shocking, isn't it, that we have in this country a willingness to actually do away with things that are good for a variety of groups rather than do what's good for African Americans, rather than thinking about the fact that when we institute policies that are good for African Americans, it tends to bring up everybody who is socially and vulnerable, marginal, that kind of thing. So I think that, in fact, it's a terrible precedent for thinking about how we're going to cope with the question of affirmative action. You know, for me, the big moment was when John Edwards, who all of us thought was too young to even run for the vice president, stood there and remembered his own childhood of seeing the black signs and the white signs in North Carolina. The fact that this guy, who we all think of as so young, he shouldn't even be running for president, can remember these periods of racial discrimination, tells us that affirmative action is still very necessary.
Earl O'Fari, the NAACP, an organization at the forefront of that fight for a long time, has had its own issues this year, both with the leadership, the stepping down of Kwaisi and Fume, the IRS going after their tax-exempt status. Where does that stand now, briefly?
Well, right now, as you know, there's a national search on for a new director of the NAACP, president of the NAACP, with a resignation, very surprised resignation of Mfumi. I think a couple of things have to happen with the NAACP. The big knock is, are you in fact really reaching out to poor, underserved communities, African-American communities? Has that happened? We've got so many issues, and we still need, by the way, civil rights, national civil rights advocacy, and an important national civil rights organization to drive that advocacy. Failing public schools right off the top. Many African-American children are trapped in these failing, underserved inner-city public schools. That's number one. Affirmative action, that still should be on the radar scope. Also, another area, crime and violence, which has racked African-American communities. What's the program? What's the plan there? Also, the economy, too. The huge amount of black youth unemployment, which, of course, is fueling the prison crisis. What's the plan and program there? So the new director, the new president of the NAACP, Tony, has got his or her hands full in trying to reach out and grapple with some of these gripping problems that hit poor African-American communities.
Well, maybe, Melissa, that person, whoever it ends up being, should call Bill Cosby, because he certainly had some ideas this year about what black people need to be doing. That has resonated or not through the community in many different ways, hasn't it?
I have to tell you, I'm never sure whether I'm more angry with what Cosby said or with the things that commentators said afterward. You know, the issue with Cosby wasn't whether or not what he said ought to be said in public. I'm a big believer that we have a right to express our ideas, especially if they're conflicting ideas in public. The big issue with Cosby was that he was just wrong. I mean, after all, if a young person uses a mind-altering drug, does poorly in school, and fails repeatedly in the early stages of his work life, there are a couple of possible outcomes. One, if you're young, poor, black, and urban, you're likely to go to prison. But if you're wealthy, if you're well privileged, if you are afforded a certain safety net, you never know, you might end up president of the United States.
Speaking of the president of the United States, as our time begins to wind down, I'm going to try to squeeze as many of these topics as I can to get in here. We can't get away without talking about the election, but from an African-American standpoint, there was speculation that Bush's faith would win him more African-American voters. And it did, didn't it, Earl?
You know, one of the great untold stories of campaign 2004 and Bush's reelection in Ohio, and I watched this very closely and to an extent very surprised, although maybe I shouldn't have been, the huge role of the black evangelical. There's an emerging force there that I think we have to keep our eye on. In Ohio, Bush got about 22% of the African-American vote. Ultimately, that translated out to about 100,000 votes. It tipped the election to Bush in Ohio in the presidency.
Also during the election, we had some new rising stars, Melissa, Barack Obama. But how much pressure is it going to be on him to deliver for every black American? That's an awful big job for one guy.
That's right. It's going to be really tough for Obama. He's got to be the senator elected from the state of Illinois, which is a diverse state, both in terms of its rural and its urban communities, its black and its white communities. At the same time, he kind of represents this hope for the entire black race. Everyone throughout the country will be looking to him for leadership. It's going to be a really tough role for him. And so hopefully he'll put good people around him who help keep him honest and hopefully help keep him progressive.
There were other subjects that we just didn't have time to get to, obviously, with the crisis over HIV and AIDS. I want to end, though, talking about entertainment, because this year was a kind of a watershed year for entertainment, wasn't it, Earl? Particularly since we're here in Hollywood, where the Oscars are going to be held pretty soon.
We definitely are in Hollywood. Well, you know, you've got a lot of things that are going on in the entertainment world. And I think that when you look at it, I'm always keeping my eye on the rap world, the hip-hop world. I mean, we've seen so many things, but interestingly enough, because really, they have gripped the minds and the hearts of young people out there. But one thing that was very significant, we saw Russell Simmons and some of the others actually make a transition, not only just thinking about selling records, but also doing something else, engaging young people in the political process. So entertainers, and especially African-American entertainers, have to make that transition and do more of that.
Certainly. In the African-American communities across the country, Earl and Melissa, in the, about 30 seconds or so that we have, it has been one hell of a year, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. And I think 2005 will also be one hell of a year, too. All the issues that were there in 2004 are still on the table. They're going to be there in 2005. The leadership, organizations, and us as engaged and involved community activists and leaders have to be involved in terms of those issues and those problems in our communities.
A good place for us to stop. Melissa Harris-Lacewell is a professor of political science at the University of Chicago's Center for the Study of Race, Politics, and Culture. She joined us from our NPR bureau in Chicago. Earl Ofari Hutchison is a political analyst and nationally syndicated columnist based here in Los Angeles. Hey, thank you both for being on, and Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you.